workers that morale on the Marine Highway and communication between employees and management will be improved by the move to Ketchikan. There is no evidence provided for this conclusion. 7-year-old statements by employees are offered in support of the thesis, but how it will result is not described. Objective evidence suggests to us a different conclusion. Among shipboard employees who are the object of this concern, we have determined that some 251 employees live in Juneau, 186 in Ketchikan, and 230 elsewhere. How face-to-face communications will be improved by moving to a community with fewer employees, we don't understand. Electronic communications, particularly email, have vastly expanded since the employees made the statements quoted in the discussion paper more than 7 years ago, and we hope those electronic communications would not be impeded by the move. But in any event, we have not seen any case made by the discussion paper for improved communications. Finally, Mr. Chairman, I need to speak briefly about the negative impacts of this proposal. For one thing, it removes the Marine Highway from all the relationships that are vital to a government agency and with which I have no doubt that this committee is familiar. All of the agencies with whom the Marine Highway deals on a daily or weekly basis are located here in Juneau. State Departments of Administration and Law, the Federal Highway Administration, and the U.S. Coast Guard, and the employee unions are all headquartered here with good reason. And most important of all, Mr. Chairman, is the Department of Transportation itself. I'm sure that the committee is aware that every unit of government struggles on a daily basis for attention from its own department, from OMB, and from sister agencies in an effort to accomplish its mission. I'm speaking of personnel actions, contracting, planning, press releases, budgeting. In such an atmosphere, agencies which are out of town are at a disadvantage. We are also aware that the personnel and physical dislocations that are certain to result from this move will occur at a time when the Marine Highway is facing new challenges, specifically the increased emphasis on physical security and the introduction of new ferries and a new method of operation will make increased demands on the system's leadership. A wholesale change in headquarters staff would be disruptive to continuity of operations at any time, and now more than ever. The organization will survive, but at what price? Again, we don't know because those effects have not been studied. I could go on, but hopefully the committee has some understanding of the superficiality of the document which is being cited in support of the decision to move the Marine Highway. Its author did not intend it to be anything more than what he titled it, a discussion paper. But it is being referred to as if it resolved all the issues. The committee may be tempted to ask, so what if the support for the decision to move is inadequate? The decision is made, so let's live with it. The risk in doing state business this way lies in the loss of credibility that it inspires among all observers. Vital decisions regarding important state business can be based upon such a cursory examination as in this case. If the missions and measures that we have put into place have no significance, we may be setting a precedent that we may come to regret. We should ask ourselves how many neat ideas are out there just waiting for a superficial review and a hurried implementation. The committee and the public may also wonder whether this decision is consistent with the legislature's and the administration's oft-repeated focus on cost reduction. But all of that is mainly a matter for the committee's consideration. Better Ferries is primarily concerned with the long-term impact of this move on how the Marine Highway system is funded, staffed, equipped, and operated. Regrettably, we don't know authoritatively what that impact is. It has not been studied. We earnestly recommend that an independent cost-benefit analysis of this proposal be made by a qualified agent before it is implemented. That concludes my testimony, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Dahl, I'm not sure if you're the exact person to ask this question to, but I'm not sure. But The emergency incident command system that's been established for not just, you know, Homeland Security, but for all kinds of emergencies, do you know if that involves, as well as the Coast Guard, the people from the Marine Highway System? And I guess what I'm trying to do is figure out whether moving the people that might be required to be involved in an incident command system away from all their other all of the other people that would be involved in that command system is actually going to negatively impact it, or do we just get rid of the Marine Highway System as a portion of the incident command system?
Through the chair, for Mr. Seaton, I'm not familiar with every detail of that, but I know the Marine Highway is certainly involved in it, and I know the state and many independent communities throughout the coastal areas depend on the Marine Highway for many of those for assistance in an emergency situation. Respectfully, I think you might be better.
You may want to respond in writing if you don't know the answer, or anyone else.
I was just going to suggest that the better answer, you get a better answer from the Coast Guard, from those other state agencies than I could give you.
We can ask any further questions, Mr. Dahl. We have two more folks, Mr. Siebel and Ms. Bain. We're not going to be able to get to anyone else today. Submit your comments for the record. If you want to testify and have further public hearings, please put that in your comments. Mr. Siebel, you've submitted your comments for the record. If you could summarize them instead of read your testimony, that would be helpful. Thank you, sir. Identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jim Siebel. I'm retired U.S. Coast Guard commander and resident of Juneau for the past 21 years, local business owner, president of Siebel & Son Marine Surveying, hold a valid Coast Guard master's license. I'm on the board of directors of the Society of Accredited Marine Surveyors. I was appointed by the governor to sit on the Alaska Boating Safety Council, and I'm president-elect of the Glacier Valley Rotary Club for the year 2005. Basically, I was surprised 2 weeks ago to read in the Empire that the governor had decided to move the AMHS office out of Juneau, the administrative office. It came as a complete surprise to me. As a local business owner, I've learned over the past several years to pay attention to state jobs leaving Juneau. I did some research on this decision, read the PMTS study, and I just want to point out that while that paper says significant cost savings, I don't see it. The author of the paper admits using 1997 data to predict 21 of the 34 will make the move. This is really nothing more than guesswork. According to the position paper, the cost of moving this 21 positions is $396,000. The key point here is, what of the other 13 positions? How will these professional marine engineering positions be filled? If they don't come from Juneau, they'll come from somewhere else. You're going to have additional travel, moving costs, bringing people in from the lower 48 or other parts of Alaska. So the numbers are just not there. And I also read the draft lease. In that document, the Ketchikan will, quote, fix the roof. However, the background memos indicate that the roof may need more than fixing. Background material also shows the windows don't open, the building lacks proper insulation, and the building sits on a federal cleanup site. There's also, I mean, this can only add to cost to the state. The discussion paper states the move will, quote, enhance the AMHS mission. I don't see how the mission is enhanced when existing experienced personnel are alienated and quit, resulting in a loss of critical corporate memory. In summary, Mr. Chairman, I urge this committee to request a proper cost-benefit analysis be completed. And I thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning.
Skip questions, do Ms. Bain, and then we're going to have to take an Eddie. Ms. Bain? Thank you, Mr. Siebel. Sorry, I didn't say that. Ms. Bain, if you could identify yourself.
My name is Faye Bain. I am a retired state employee. For approximately 12 years, I worked for Department of Administration as leasing and fiscal manager, in other words, of state leases and the Division of General Services budgetary. I got involved in this very late, actually. Last night, I really got involved in it. I haven't seen much of the background, but what I have seen raised questions. I'm going to speak mainly about the lease and the building because that's what I'm most familiar with, is where I worked with the state. That's where my expertise very first place, the lease that's being used doesn't contain everything that it should. There aren't the proper protections for the state. It calls out a minimum of 6,200 square feet. Elsewhere in the document, it's 6,219. If I look on the back on the little schematic that's not real easily read or interpreted, it appears that we're talking leasable square feet, which is directly opposed to usable square foot. Usable square foot is that space that is directly occupied by the personnel or equipment of the state in the state's prison. It does not include hallways, corridors, bathrooms, so-called common space, but rather is based on the actual space used by the state in its business. In the Blomfield lease, that 3.5 mile, I know for a fact that that's what it's based on, is usable square footage. So I don't know, and it hasn't been pointed out here, how many minimum square feet at whatever they're using here really relates to.
Ms. Bain, you're going to have to just hit the bullets of your testimony for two reasons. One, we have that bill, and three, we have four sessions.
Okay. So number one is how many square feet are you talking about? You can't have cost without knowing that for sure. Is there anyone to backfill the space if they're vacating because there's no savings if there isn't? The building has mold and is damp, has very inadequate wiring, and the cost-benefit analysis, or what passes for one, does not talk about tenant improvements over and above what the city, Gateway, Borough of Ketchikan said they will do. And believe you me, when you get into tenant improvements, they're very expensive. And so all of these things need to be looked at. And so I also urge, I'm just a member of the general public here, but I also urge you to look at all of the costs involved, because this doesn't address them at all.
Thank you, Ms. Bain. I know this is not satisfactory for everyone who's here. Limited forum, we're doing our best. I urge you to do your comments in writing. Mr. Briggs, if you want to rebut anything in writing, you're welcome to. I don't want to feel like you got short shrift. And I'm thankful for your all indulgence. We're going to take a quick at ease. I want to come back on record with our formal LA person, Representative Holmes, introduce this bill. Most of you guys will be gone.